These three tendencies are mutually self-validating. It is the growth in speculative capital flows moving in a trend-following fashion that makes the trend so persistent. It is the persistence of the trend that makes a trend-following bias so rewarding, and it is the rewards reaped by speculation that attract increasing amounts of capital. The longer a benign circle lasts, the more attractive it is to hold financial assets in the appreciating currency, and the more important the exchange rate becomes in calculating total return. Those who are inclined to fight the trend are progressively eliminated, and in the end, only trend followers survive as active participants. As speculation gains in importance, other factors lose their influence. There is nothing to guide speculators but the market itself, and the market is dominated by trend followers. These considerations explain how the dollar could continue to appreciate in the face of an ever-rising trade deficit. Eventually, a crossover point would have been reached, even without the intervention of the authorities, when the inflow of speculative funds could not keep pace with the trade deficit and with rising interest obligations, and the trend would have been reversed. Since the predominating bias is trend following, speculative capital would then have started moving in the opposite direction. If and when that happened, the reversal could easily have accelerated into a free fall. For one thing, speculation and fundamental flows would then have worked in the same direction. Even more important, when a change in trend is recognized, the volume of speculative transactions is likely to undergo a dramatic, not to say catastrophic, increase. While a trend persists, speculative flows are incremental. But a reversal involves not only the current flow, but also the accumulated stock of speculative capital. The longer the trend has persisted, the larger the accumulation. There are, of course, mitigating circumstances. One is that market participants are likely to recognize a change in trend only gradually. The other is that the authorities are bound to be aware of the danger and do something to prevent a crash. How the drama actually unfolded will be the subject of a later chapter. Here we are trying to establish a general proposition. Taking the three generalizations together, it can be asserted that speculation is progressively destabilizing. The destabilizing effect arises not because the speculative capital flows must be eventually reversed, but exactly because they need not be reversed until much later. If they had to be reversed in short order, capital transactions would provide a welcome cushion for making the adjustment process less painful. If they need not be reversed, the participants get to depend on them so that eventually, when the turn comes, the adjustment becomes that much more painful. It is quite likely that the generalization about the progressive accumulation of hot money holds true not only within a cycle, but also from one cycle to another. Although the history of fluctuating exchange rates is too short to provide reliable evidence. It has certainly been true so far. The size of speculative capital movements was far greater in Reagan's benign circle than it was during Carter's vicious circle. Empirical studies of the 1930s also showed accumulative growth in hot money movements, although circumstances were somewhat different because currencies were not freely floating. We can see why hot money should continue to accumulate as long as real interest rates are high and the return on physical investments low. Keeping capital in liquid form in an appreciating currency is more rewarding than investing it in physical assets. What is needed to give the generalization universal validity is an argument that would show that fluctuating exchange rates are associated with high returns on financial assets and low returns on physical investments. Let me try. We have seen that hot money can earn exceptional returns if it gets the trend right. Since it sets the trend, that is likely to be the case. Physical assets represent the opposite side of the coin. They cannot move to take advantage of the trend. The tradable goods sector is bound to suffer when a currency appreciates. Of course, a depreciating currency brings windfall profits to exporters, but having been hurt before, exporters are loath to invest in the basis of a temporary advantage. They prefer to hold their profits in financial assets, contributing to the growth of hot money. The process can be most clearly observed in the United Kingdom, where exporters refused to expand when sterling fell below $1.10 in 1985, despite record profits. How right they were. Sterling rose above $1.50 by April 1986. Thus, both an appreciating currency and a depreciating currency discourage physical investment and foster the accumulation of hot money. We can attempt yet another tentative generalization. When a long-term trend loses its momentum, short-term volatility tends to rise. It is easy to see why that should be so. The trend-following crowd is disoriented. The generalization is tentative because it is based on inadequate evidence. It certainly was true when the dollar reversed its trend in 1985. If these generalizations are indeed valid, the eventual demise of a system of freely fluctuating exchange rates is inevitable. Fluctuations become so wild that either the system has to be modified by some kind of government intervention, or it is bound to break down. Currency markets thus provide the best support for my contention that financial markets are inherently unstable. There is no built-in tendency toward equilibrium. To the extent that we need stability, we must introduce it by deliberate policy measures. These conclusions may not strike the reader as particularly revolutionary at the present time, but they certainly contradicted the prevailing wisdom at the time they were written, in April to May 1985. There was widespread malaise about the instability of exchange rates, but belief in the magic of the market was still running strong. And the famous Plaza Agreement in September 1985 came as something of a shock to market participants. Even today, there is no theoretical underpinning for the contention that a freely floating exchange rate system is cumulatively destabilizing. That is what I hope to have provided here. I have been speculating in currencies ever since they started floating, but I have failed to make money on a consistent basis. On balance, I traded profitably through 1980, then chalked up losses between 1981 and 1985. My approach has been tentative, based more on intuition than on conviction. By temperament, I have always been more interested in picking the turning point than in following a trend. I managed to catch both the rise and fall of European currencies against the dollar until 1981, but I traded myself out of my positions too soon. Having lost the trend, I found it too demeaning to start following the trend followers. I tried to pick the reversal point instead, needless to say, without success. I had some temporary profits in the early part of 1984, but I gave them all back. I was again engaged in a speculation against the dollar at the time I wrote this chapter. Writing it has undoubtedly helped to clarify my thoughts. Admittedly, the theory is far too abstract to be of much use in making concrete predictions. Specifically, the turning point cannot be determined until it has actually occurred. But as we shall see, the theory can be very useful in interpreting events as they unfold.